Music session number 28645, reel 23.
Now, you've mentioned your robins, and you said your life was totally taken up with
wildlife and painting, and visits to London, and for openings of shows and that sort of thing. One was always doing something. And then in 56, my mother was having trouble with, well, terrible trouble. She was badly cheated out of her business. It was a dreadful thing. And she finally decided she had to leave her beloved house. And I heard about this.
This what?
This house. So I raced to see it because it sounded like just the thing.
This is about twice the size of the cottage you were in, is it?
Yes, I suppose it is, roughly. So I came to see it, and I just bought it. Borrowed the money from the bank and bought it. Which was just as well. She broke her heart leaving her beautiful house in East Grinstead. Dated back to 1200, and she restored it. She did everything for it. However, there it was. She was ill, and what was one thing and what was another.
She came to live with you here?
She came to live in this house. Did this up.
You sold your little cottage?
No. I stayed in my cottage, and they lived here.
Oh, I see. Your parents lived here.
Mm. But I really spent my time painting and observing what my wildlife did. And I had one little black great tit, and I had her till she was a great grandmother,
which would be about four seasons.
She nested, and she was tamed, nested, and brought her family, and then her family brought their families, and their families brought more families, until I had 17 tame ones, and they used to come hopping along my table when I was painting for their nuts. They came regularly and hopped along the table, and I duly fed them, and then off they went until they wanted another. And I used to sunbathe in those days in my garden, and when they wanted their nuts, they used to come and tweak my toes. Hey, where are our nuts? One year, I remember, it was after that terrible cold year, which I think was 61, not quite sure.
62-3
was it. And all the birds died. It was terrible.
Snow lasted for 3 months where I lived.
That's right. And here we had no traffic at all. None. And the farm sent its milk to the square, and people bought it, and it was unpasteurized, and everybody said hooray. It tasted so gorgeous. I was completely boxed up in my cottage.
With snow?
Yeah. And I had no money to heat, so there was one bigger bedroom and one tiny bedroom, so I just had the heat on in the tiny bedroom, and the rest of the house was all great big thick icicles inside. It was like an ice cave.
Including your living room?
Oh, yes, yes. No, I lived in this one little room. There was a bed in there, and I worked, and I painted in there.
Oh, I see you lived in one room.
One little room. A small bedroom. Anyhow, all the birds died. It was a terrible winter, absolutely dreadful. And the result of that was that they all had enormous families the next spring. And I had two blue tits, and I had two porches, one on each side of the house. And they used to nest under the tiles. And the one on the street side, that was fine. They had room. But The other one nested under the small porch. And one day I looked out and there was a small bird had fallen out. So I picked it up and put it back, but that was no good because the place was overcrowded. There were about 18 of them in there. So I thought, what am I going to do? It won't go back. So I went and got a pail and put it underneath the nest, and they kept coming out, plop, plop, plop. I put some nice warm stuff at the bottom of the pail. That was fine. So finally the whole family was in the pail. And we had some awful thunderstorms at that time, so I had to get an umbrella and fix it over the pail. And the parents thought this was a very bright idea. It made a lovely landing station, and then they could go down inside and feed them. And away again. So I had the umbrella and I watched the whole fledging of this family, from little naked chicks right up to when they flew. It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating, to watch them clean the sheaths off their new feathers, pushing them off, practicing with their wings. It was a marvelous education to watch the whole thing. Wonderful. And the parents were very happy, and the babies were very happy, and they duly fledged and flew. But everything was overcrowded in that spring. Everybody was having enormous families. Wrens had enormous families too. I had an old apple tree on the lawn, and it was like a block of flats, because there were three holes in the trunk. And the big one was taken over by blackbirds, and the next big one was taken over by starlings, and the one up above was taken over by great tits. They all lived one on top of the other. It was wonderful. It was a marvelous life, it really was. Just watching what went on in the garden. And all my tame birds. I had a little tame mouse too. It was one of those rarities, every now and again a wood mouse is gold instead of beige. And I had one of them. He had a little white front and he was golden furred. And he used to take nuts out of my hand. He used to come to the studio door. I'd have to interrupt my painting and go and feed him. Meanwhile, the great tits were on the table, also wanting their nuts. It was lovely, it really was. It was Eden-like. Yes.
Have you always been aware of this affinity with natural history that you appear to have had?
Yes, I think I grew up with it, because we had this enormous amount of territory in which I could wander about as I pleased, and I was fascinated by everything. So right from, six and a half, seven, when we lived there. And there was nothing else in the way of amusement. I mean, there was no television, there was no radio. Oh, yes, that goes in the living in bit that we're going to do about the house. Remember, we left that out.
The living in?
Yes, when we put in the water and all that sort of thing.
Oh, we're not talking about Devon.
Yes, we left that out as a block to do.
Yes, we did, that's right.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
But there was nothing to do. There was, as I say, we had a gramophone, a very splendid gramophone, wonderful. And there was nothing to do but go and observe what was going on in the garden. There was nothing in the house except reading, of course, reading and the learning that I did with with my various mother's friends who came to stay, and they used to teach me. But apart from that, I just wandered about in the garden, observing what grew and what was alive, and everything to do with wildlife, really.
And so your life was taken up with this minute examination and a recording of natural history in your garden and roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
Painting, which you exhibited in free shows. And did you obtain commissions from time to time?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You did. As a percentage of your, I know it's a difficult question for you, Suzanne, but as a percentage of your work done between 54 and whenever you stopped painting, how much did you have you sold?
Do you know, I haven't got a record. Nothing very exciting.
So in other words, what I'm saying is, where is the bulk of your work? Is it sold or given away, or do you still have it?
I've still got a lot of it.
Have you?
Mm. Which on principle I'm leaving to the RHS. They seem to be quite glad to have it on principle. And the toadstool books, as I told you, I gave them to Q. I still haven't had it.
But you still own the copyright to those books? You haven't given
Oh,
them
yes.
Them. Yes.
Yes, oh yes, they're all copyrighted.
Merely the published books have gone to Q.
They're copyrighted, and they're copyrighted on the electronic copyright or whatever it is they do.
Yes.
I don't understand it, but Brian does, and he's got it all on the in the book.
You're still in touch with Brian Nicholson?
Oh, yes, yes.
When did you stop painting?
I don't know. I stopped painting. I was still trying to paint to get the last pictures done for the second volume. So that would be, I don't know when it was. Just disappeared.
What, your painting just disappeared, really?
Mm. I'd have to look up the date of the book.
Of the second toadstool book?
Because the last pictures were a great effort. I had to do them with a magnifying glass, and it was hard going.
Was it visual and physical infirmity that stopped you painting?
No, it was my eyes.
Your eyes?
Mm-hmm. My life was really living 2 days in one. I'd do my painting while there was daylight, morning and afternoon. About 4 o'clock I'd give up, 5 o'clock, depending on the time of year. And then I would start another day, housekeeping and anything else I had to do. So that the days were divided into two complete contrast, really.
And of course, you saw quite a lot of your parents, I would think, looking
yes.
after them here, because they would have been in their 80s. No, not quite.
No, not quite, no.
Not by then, 70s.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And my father, when I was in Egypt and for the troubles, my father was inspecting in Japan. And after Japan, he did France and he did Italy. And he did Germany. He went on working very late because he was so good. And then he got across with one of the managers in Germany, and he was sent away. It's his fatal fascination with being right. He was right, but he didn't let a person get away with it. Who was not right. He rubbed it in. He rubbed it into the wrong man. So he lost his job. But he worked till he was, well, into his 70s. Nearly 80. He was a very, very good inspector.
He worked well into his 70s.
Well, he was working in 52 because he was in Japan. He worked for some years after that. 60. Yes, my mother was already here before he stopped work, so I think he stopped work at about 60. 60, 70, yes, he must have been 80. No, 84 he was.
So he was 76?
Yeah. Yes, he'd be. In Germany, they all started work about 6 o'clock. They knocked off in the afternoon early, but they started very early. He was always there.
I must take you back, if I may, a little bit to your husband and his family. If you don't want to put this on tape, then don't. But as the tape is only really for your...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I am intrigued that at a reasonably mature age in 1939, you weren't a youngster.
No, I was 24.
24. 25 almost.
Mm.
You got married to a man 26 years your senior, and to a family that were devout Catholics, with a very difficult mother-in-law in Brittany.
Well, she didn't have much to do with us. I mean, she was in Brittany, we didn't see her. The only time I ever saw her was when I was taken up to meet her.
Right. And
she died fairly soon afterwards. After all, she was... not exactly in her first youth either.
No. And...
Because he was 50-ish when we went there. And so she must have been 70 then.
You have your hand over the microphone.
Oh, yes. He was 50, so she must have been 70 then.
Well, my point is this.
Why was I such an idiot?
No. That's a question you posed, which you may answer. It's not one that I posed. You know, the question I'm going to pose is this, is that it appears that you, from what you've said, that you had... I have not gleaned that you had an unhappy marriage. In fact,
yes.
The opposite.
Oh, no, it was miserable.
Was it?
Yes. There were two parts to it. You see, my husband was a very intelligent and very good man. And we used to have long philosophical discussions. And he taught me to appreciate French poetry and all sorts of things. And I taught him about wildlife, because he didn't know anything about wildlife. So we both complimented each other. And as long as we weren't... I don't know, we'd have been much better as father and daughter.
Well, you could almost have been. In fact, you could have been 26 years difference.
Mm. We got on very well as friends, but we didn't get on very well as lovers. But as friends, we got on very well.
Yet despite that, you left in 54 and never returned.
Yes, well, it had worked up to it. I mean, I was miserable, cooped up in a flat in Paris with not a flower in sight, no animals, no nothing. There was just nothing that I liked there. My husband was... he was no longer very keen on going out as we had done before.
By which you mean the opera and...
Yes. Mm. I felt caged.